by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
I'm on the case. Every foul wicked spirit is the host. The news.
20 minutes. That's the rule of A. On the news. Spread out.
On the news, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into the adversarial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Orgasm Karmatic, and I have Female Satan with me on the line. How are you? How has your week been?
Good. Busy. How is everybody?
Oh, man. Busy. Ew.
How's your friend that was in the hospital?
You know, she took a nosedive a couple days ago, and we were really, really concerned. And they wanted to do a tracheotomy to get rid of the ventilator. And they found out she is one of the 5%, because our veins, a normal person's veins, I guess you could say normal, they run horizontally, and she is one of the 5% of the population in the entire universe that her veins actually run horizontally.
Oh,
so
wow.
So they had to call in a surgical specialist to put the tracheotomy, or the trache in, and then it dislodged itself, so she had to go back into the operating room and be, you know. But there was some really, really good news. They're taking her off the sedative because, I mean, they were pumping her through so much sedative. The doctor said that it was enough that could put a horse down. She was still waking
wow.
up, and they were like, okay, you know what? If she wants to wake up, we're just going to let her wake up. I mean, we're done with that. And they took the wire out of her brain, which was measuring her ICP levels, her intracranial pressure. And she's been doing fairly well. I guess she woke up last night and kind of looked around and tried to move.
Good.
But they still have her in braces, obviously. She's got her broken ribs, and her body's just all sorts of broken right now. But they finally think that they're going to be able to do surgery on Monday. So that's a pretty amazing feat after, you know, a couple of weeks. I can't believe it's been a couple of weeks already. It's pretty crazy, but she's done really, really well. I'm very proud of her. I'm waiting until they allow her friends to come up and visit again because they closed off visitation for a while.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I'm glad that at least she woke up. That's good, because I know last week it was pretty touch and go there for a while.
Yeah, they did finally clear her earlier this week. They cleared that, you know, she's not in any danger of death. They definitely think she will live. They just don't know if she will walk. And I think she will. So I don't really care what they say.
Well,
and she's a pretty stubborn girl. She's pretty strong, and she's worked very hard to get to where she is. And I think that, you know, life's definitely not done with her yet. Or actually, we should probably turn it around and say she's not done with life yet. She kind of told them to go on with its bad self, you know, when she came back. So just keeping her in my thoughts and trying not to go to jail in the process. And the only reason I say not go to jail is, you know, I've worked, you know, 50-plus hours this week, which is almost double what I'm used to working during the summer because the school semester started. And, you know, working 12-hour days is just, it's wreaking havoc on my body. So, but, you know,
well,
money.
You normally work that during the school year, though, don't you? About that
yeah,
much week?
between the months of September and May, I work anywhere between 10 to 12 hour days.
Okay.
And I was just promoted, too. I was just promoted to management.
Good. Congratulations.
So thank you. It's only been 3.5 years. So,
yeah.
So that's good. I am having some issues with a coworker, but, you know, that shit happens, and I don't really care. If I did, it would just be a mess. So... But they're all good news aside, and it seems things are leveling out for now. And, you know, I'm one of those people that go around and I say I don't drink and smoke and stuff like that, but I'm not going to lie. I went out on Tuesday night after I was closing down, and I went out and I had a couple of beers, and I said, fuck this. And I'm not a beer drinker, and that beer was good. So... You know when you have
stuff when you're doing that kind of stuff. Yeah, sometimes you have to do that kind of stuff, or you know.
Oh yeah.
Just to blow
up. So I've lifted my drinking ban for the time being. I went out to a bonfire last Saturday, and I drank a good portion of SoCo, and I was like three sheets to the wind. I was. It was a glorious feeling. I'm like, yes, I can do this. So.
Oh, man, I haven't drank Southern Comfort in forever.
Yeah. Well, there's a running joke, at least amongst my friends, is you never really quite remember why you haven't drank SoCo in a long time until after you've drank the SoCo. And the problem with me is it gives me, like, the most horrible gut rot in the entire universe. I woke up on, oh, no, this was on Friday. Because I woke up on that Saturday completely hungover, and I was so unashamed of it. I go, you know what, I don't care. I'm hungover, and I need my vitamin water. Just give it to me. So, you know, fun times.
Yeah.
Today's topic is mortality, and I went through the Ooze archives to make sure that this wasn't recently covered because I had a lot of time to keep up on what they're doing. I know Outbreak's doing their take action, and I think that's going to last for about a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed that throughout all of the archives, I didn't see mortality mentioned once, like even just once. So I thought it might be interesting to go over it, especially with, you know, Courtney. I went on my death rant and all that good stuff after what happened with that with Courtney. So. Mortality. A lot of people are obsessed with it. Some people can't get over it. Some people, you know, do it to themselves. Either way, it's all an end that we all end up at. That sentence was retarded. But, you know, I go in and out, like, every about 10 years or so, I have this, like, brush with realization that I am mortal. And no matter how much I joke that I'm the devil or the Antichrist, I will eventually meet my end. I will not wake up one day and see everything around me. And that really freaks me out. It really, really freaks me out. And then in between then, I kind of get apathetic about it and I don't really care. I know in high school, I was that creepy goth with the really bad attitude problem. And I was extremely suicidal in high school.
Yeah.
And so I was very much obsessed with the concept of death and not having to wake up the next day and have to deal with all of the shit that I thought I would never grow up and be able to come to terms with, which obviously I grew up and came to terms with it. Which brings me to, you know, something I always tell myself when I'm in a situation I don't think that I'm capable of dealing with. It's always like, you know, there is an end to this. It's going to stop. And then when you look back on it, you're going to go, yeah, that's pretty shitty. That was a shitty time in my life, but I'm happier now. So, you know, it's all right.
My main goal when anything bad happens in my life is to, and I do this, like my husband will watch the lesson. He says, always, something's going on, I'll be like, what's the lesson? And he'll be like, what? I'll be like, these things only happen so that you can learn a lesson, so that you can move forward. So what's the lesson so that we can get out of the situation? he thinks it's hysterical because I'll walk around and be like, well, so-and-so's going on. Well, it's obvious that last thing I had a real brush with mortality. My uncle died, and his family actually got really, really, really angry because it was literally the day before Thanksgiving. So they wound up through this big, like a huge family battle, getting me to go to Thanksgiving, but they didn't bother to tell anybody that my uncle had died. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So there were like, and they're a family of nurses and, you know, somebody the doctor, somebody the nurse, somebody's done this, and they all work in the medical field. So they're making death jokes, like, the entire time. And, like, I wound up actually, like, bursting into tears and crying hysterically, making, like, a total idiot out of myself. And we wind up leaving, and my husband just starts laughing hysterically in the car, and I said, what's so funny? And he said, I'm your Uncle Johnny. And he would have thought that this is the funniest thing that had ever happened, ever. And I was like, it's not funny. And he was like, but he would think it was funny. And he was like, and before you even ask the question, that's the lesson, to go ahead and laugh even during bad times. That's the lesson. But, yeah, that was I can't even remember the joke, but it was just, yeah, it was so, yeah. And then as soon as we left, of course, his mom tells everybody, oh, her uncle died yesterday. Yeah, so it was all like, all this apologizing and phone calls to apologize, and just, it was craziness. But yeah, it actually, it's funny now. It was not funny at the time. But yeah, that's sorry.
You know, I wrote recently on a blog. I believe it was Crystal's blog, because I'm trying to play nurse. And then, you know, whatever, I have an opinion, when I just voice it. And I said that I am a dick, and I like to fuck with people, and I think, you know, I also claim on there that anybody that comes up to me and says, hey, I'm suicidal, I'm going to jump off a bridge. I actually had a friend do this one night. He called me up. Well, we're not friends anymore, but he called me up and said, I am standing on the edge of a bridge. I'm going to kill myself. And he got really quiet, and I literally looked at my phone. I pulled my phone away from my ear, looked at my phone, put it back up to my ear, and I said, then do it. He goes, what? And I go, do it. He goes, I'm going to do it. You just don't know. I go, if you wanted to be dead that badly, you would be gone. You would be dead. And there's nothing that I can say to you to make you feel any better. Well, how can you say that? Because I've been there. And I know. And I think that a part of the reason I am so harsh on people that are suicidal, and, you know, they want everything to end so they don't have to go through everything. I view them very much as I see some people that I know have mental disorders that can be manageable without medication, but they don't try before they just drug themselves up. I don't have any sympathy for people like that, and that's the real reason behind it. Is it's not necessarily that I'm just sick. I come off as one, but it's because I've been in those situations, and I can manage it just fine. And you got to remember, there's always someone out there that has it worse than you are, and they are still surviving. You know, there was a movie, this movie scene that I'm always remembered of. I don't know what it was, but there was two people being admitted to emergency, and one was a suicide attempt, and the other one had gotten to an accident, and the doctor said, the one with the suicide attempt, that one can wait. I'm going to go help the one with the accident. And he got yelled at for it. And he said, I want to help somebody who actually wants to live.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh no,
that one always sticks. It always stuck in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't see any point in wasting any time. Yes, I see. I have my daughter over here, so she just shoved the little kitten into a box, and I had to see
aww.
It.
Awesome.
I'm sure
yeah,
the cat's
no, I'm
not very happy.
Yeah, I saw that blog. I stayed out of all of that. I had no idea what's going on. I haven't been in chat, and I have no clue. It looked to me, just from what I saw, like nothing really happened, but she kind of did her thing again. But, yeah, no, I do agree with you about people that are suicidal. I think in most cases it's a cry for attention, and I don't think they realize that it's final. I think that's, death in general, I think, is one of those things that people project a lot onto because they don't understand what it is. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. You don't know what it's like to die until you die, you know, and then you can't, you know, obviously come back and write a book report so everybody knows what's going on. So we all have to guess and postulate and, you know, assume and come to conclusions about it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's one of those. It's definitely something that I think humanity's been afraid of since time began, you know, and they've personified it because of that.
Well, I always think it's I do find it sad when when you read about suicides because of the same fact that I'm so critical of people who want to attempt a suicide because it is hard. It really is. I understand why you would think that is your only option, because when you're in the heat of the moment like that, that to you is your only option, and it is very real. It's very much something that you can't get out of your head, and you have to talk to someone at that point. And
yeah,
that's fine. I happen to not really be the right person to talk to about it, but I can tell if a person is serious and a person is not. Now, the person that was sitting on the edge of a bridge, was he really on the edge of a bridge? Yeah. Yeah, he was. I knew he was. But was he going to jump? Absolutely not. Because he was an attention getter with everything that he did. Any statement he made, any action he took, it was all for attention. And I remember when I was in that state of mind, I denied that what I did was, you know, a cry for help, or I wanted, you know, people to come talk to me about what was going on, or I needed to relinquish some kind of turmoil that was causing me to act the way that I was. In high school, you would not have been able to get me to even open up to you at all. There was one person in high school that knew exactly what I was doing, and I have to thank her immensely, because she would pull me into the locker room and she would make sure nothing got infected. You know what I mean? She would,
yeah.
You know, make sure that everything was taken care of, because she knew that after I had done something like that, you know, you look at it and then you've got to figure out how you're going to repair it. Because it calms
mm-hmm.
you down, you look at it, but then you still have to maintain it. And when you're in that state of mind, you have no interest in maintaining it. So I really have to thank her, and I always will, because she's probably part of the reason I didn't lose any limbs. So,
yeah.
You know, but at the same time, you know, when as I've grown older, I realized that all of that was a cry for attention. I wanted somebody to lean on, and I did not feel like I had that support. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the more you need that support, the more outlandish you're going to get. And mm-hmm. for me, it just got worse and worse and worse because high school, you know, kids aren't going to pull you over and ask if you're okay. You're basically going to be ignored if you act like you want to be ignored. And I acted like I didn't want anybody around me when the opposite was the truth. I needed somebody around me. So,
well, and it's a bit of a catch-22 because I think that people reach a point where they're crying out for help, but at the same time, it's, I don't know, they're also shoving people away at the same time, you know, and it makes it,
right.
You know, people don't want to engage them or don't want to help because they, you know, they need the attention so badly that, you know, that you know, they can be a bit of a drain on somebody else. My sister went through a phase like that, and I remember that. It was a little bit different. She was pregnant every week, long story. She really wasn't, but she told her pretty she was. But, yeah, I remember that. That was her version of crying out for attention. And, I mean, it was just, it got to the point where, like, nobody wanted to talk to her because everything had to be about her, but at the same time, she did need something somewhere, or she wouldn't have been acting that way to begin with.
I had a couple of friends that were like that through high school. They used that. Personally, I didn't think I tried to draw any attention to myself, which I think was my attempt to draw attention to myself, if that makes any sense.
It does, yeah.
But, you know, it can be overwhelming. I've had friends where, since I've acknowledged what I'm doing to myself and what I'm doing to other people, I've had friends that need someone to lean on. And it takes a very strong backbone. Like, it takes a lot because they are essentially energy suckers. They are, I hate to use this, but they are psychic vampires. Mainly because of need, not so much because they're doing it on purpose. And it takes a lot. It can be very overwhelming when you find out a person is out there and they're sitting there and they're like, you acknowledge the fact that they're sitting in their bedroom at night cutting themselves. You know what I mean? Like, this person sits alone in their dark room, literally slicing their... I mean, that's something that people joke about with emo kids. You know, so to acknowledge that outside of the realm of humor is really hard to take.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a difficult topic, and I can see both sides of the fence. I just choose not to deal with it so much anymore because I just don't have that kind of energy. I can't deal out that kind of energy at the moment. So, but I'm very unforgiving for the people that use it and they know they're not doing it and they know that they don't necessarily need help. They're just doing it because they just want. It's a very different type of attention seeking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so destructive, you know, most commonly. But, I mean, you know, I think it's difficult to, I think that it's very difficult to try to help anybody else with their own problem, you know, especially when you have your own. And that's something that, you know, like I'm a bit of a giver. I always have been. And I'll give to it till it hurts. But I've learned, you know, not at the expense of myself. And that's been actually, you know, that starts changing really quickly how much you actually are, you know, out there doing for others, because you start realizing pretty quickly, I just don't have the time or the energy or, you know, the inclination anymore.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, it's really hard to come to that conclusion because for like humanitarians, for example, you know, it's hard to be that kind of person, to be a giving person and admit that you can't give and not have some sort of guilt attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process. You have to, you know, and I've actually gone through this with a personal experience with a relative. I've gotten to the point where I just can't help anymore, because every time I help, you know, I end up getting screwed over in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
can't afford to take that blow after blow after blow when I'm trying to go forward. Because every time you get hit, you go backwards. So
yep.
I've come to terms with the fact that there are just some people that I cannot help. And it's especially hard with my relative because, you know, I have never said no to her before. And so for me to go and say no to her now, she gets angry. She's
mm-hmm.
angry with me. She won't even talk to me right now. And she thinks that I'm being, you know, a bitch to her and just all these nasty things, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't feel guilty about it anymore. I used to, but I don't feel guilty about it anymore because I've taken so many hits. That I've just had enough.
Yeah, that's pretty much that's what I've had to do with several members of my family. Actually, is I just realized it's not worth it because, like my mother, for example, this is kind of the last conversation we had, which was there was actually something going on with me, and I was trying to talk to her about it, and she continued to interrupt me. She's like, well, that sucks. Well, let me tell you about my day. And it was like she was trying to out pity me, out bad luck me or something. And I was on the phone with her and I was like, you know, not only are you not helping me, I feel like you're actually making it worse because I was like, I was actually trying to talk to you because, and I was trying to talk to her because she's my mother, so I thought she could help with what was going on, but no, that wasn't working because we weren't talking about her problems. And that's actually about the last time I talked to her because I realized it doesn't serve me to talk to her. It does the opposite. I don't get a good feeling when I help her out. I feel guilted and I feel resentful afterwards. And then my
big
marker is, do I resent it? Because if I resent it, I probably shouldn't do it.
Right, and I totally agree. I think my mother and your mother should, you know, get together and have coffee. Because seriously,
yeah.
Because I had pretty much the last conversation I had with my mom was today, and it was over money that I let her borrow, and for some reason she did the math and realized that she only had to pay me, you know, part of the money that she borrowed. You know, she came up with some whacked out mathematical, like, you're not losing any money by doing this. And I'm like, yeah, I am. She just, you know, I had come to her about a week or so ago because I was having a really rough time between, you know, what was going on with Courtney and what was going on personally in my life, trying to get my shit in order. And, after I was done, I did feel a little bit better until, you know, the next week when I had come over and I had mentioned, you know, because my daughter lives with my mother. And
mm-hmm.
and while I'm living here with Sean, so I'm trying to get my resources together so I can get my own place and have Kay stay with me and stuff like that. And, you know, my mom decided to bring up the conversation of when I texted her and I brought up the fact that I was having, you know, old feelings again and I didn't know how to deal with them and I needed someone to talk to. And she brought that conversation up and she used it against me. And
mm-hmm.
I told her, I told her, you know what? I'm never coming to you again. Ever.
Yep.
Ever, ever, ever. I'm never coming to you again. I'm not going to talk to you when I have a hard time. And just, you know, it was the same conversation I had with her today. If you ever need help, don't call me. And she said, if you ever need a place to stay, don't come to my house. So, you know, I didn't leave on very good terms. We're not speaking to each other, and she's very upset with me. So, and she is one of those people, you know, bringing it back to topic, she's one of those people that she's very, very obsessed with her own death. Truly believe she has a mental issue, but she definitely is a hypochondriac. She's probably got a pharmacy worth of shit, you know, that half of it she doesn't take, but the doctors feel like from what she's telling them she needs. And she's just very focused on, you know, after the kids are grown up, then I'm going to die. And I keep telling her, you know, if you stay in that mental state, if you allow yourself after so many years to believe that no matter what you do, you're going to die at a certain age, you're going to die. You're going to put it into your brain. They've already proven your brain is a very powerful, powerful thing. If you make believe that you're pregnant after so long, you know, they've had women that they produce milk because they think they're pregnant, you know.
Yeah.
And I keep telling you, you can't be so focused on death. And Wicked told me something the other day. I'm probably going to misquote it, but we were talking about this topic, and he was like, we have to come to terms with our morality so that we can actually live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you spend the entire time focused on not wanting to die, you're never going to live. You're not going to actually live. And, you know, that's something that stuck with me. And we were having another conversation about it on the way home from work the other day. And I said, you know, I'm going to do two things. I said, one, I'm going to stop self-sabotaging. And another thing is I'm going to start living my life. Because I have been so anxiety-ridden the past few months that I've literally only focused on getting through the day. And it got me through, but if I was to die tomorrow, I would have very few things that I could say that I was proud of or that I didn't do just to do. And was actually happy. So I've decided to change that as well. And so far, so good. So that's pretty cool. But I still don't think that I've come to terms with my mortality. I guess I haven't come to terms with my morality either. But that's a completely different subject.
Well, it's not an easy one. I mean, you know, when you have kids, it's even more difficult. You have this, you know, at least for me, I mean, I don't worry about, like, when I think about it, and I don't think about it often, honestly, I'm relatively apathetic to the whole thing, but when I do, my main concern is, like, what's going to happen to my kids? That's what gets me freaked out, is, like, what happens to other people if I'm not here tomorrow? You know, that's where my obsession and my focus is. I mean, I did the whole thing. I mean, you know, when we had the first kid, I, you know, wrote the will and did the whole thing and, you know, prayed and hoped that, you know, yeah, like, we talked all of that out, I mean, and it was a strange thing to do, actually, like, you know, sitting down, and yeah, we really, you know, I had to just to feel better before I had my oldest son with my husband, which is my second oldest son, Steve. I had to, you know, really sit and kind of break down what would happen if I died, And that's the last time I really gave it a lot of thought was that, and that's where the thought always goes, is everybody is just going to fall apart and nothing will ever happen. Basically, is like my conclusion is that, I don't know, like my entire, the entire household would fall apart in 5 seconds and nobody would be able to function, sort of thing.
You know, I think like, so. I would have to think, though, that for a while there, things would be a little off-kilter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would think that there would be a demolishing state of household and a rebuilding from the ground up with the new family household without you. I also agree that my first thought when I think of not waking up the next day is, oh, God, okay, did I, what was the last situation I had with my daughter? What was the last thing I said to my son? You know, where am I going to be when I die? Those are a lot of questions that I ask. Will I have been able to settle certain things? See, I should write a will. I should have a living will. My mom suggested it to me when I was 16 and I had my son. And I looked at it and I go, psh, I ain't dying anytime soon. And then, you know, my doctor told me, well, you haven't been taking your iron during your pregnancy, so there's a good chance you could bleed out. Oh. Okay, well, we're just going to hope that doesn't happen. And,
yeah,
you know,
prepared.
So... So, obviously, I didn't die, but it's something I've given thought to. It's just weird for me to think about doing a will, especially since I really don't have that much,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so the basics are already taken care of. They're already set in stone, like where my kids will stay and who will be taking care of them. And I do fear for people around me. I think about the people around me dying more often than I think about myself dying. I think about it every time I cross the road with my daughter and she decides that she's going to run ahead of me and not look both ways. I think that's a really typical parental thing.
Yeah.
I think about it almost every day when it comes to my mother, even though, you know, she hates me right now.
Yeah.
It's still something I know that if my mom died, there would be, you know, 2 homeless children, you know, my 9-year-old brother and my 5-year-old. And I know she has a will, but I think about what I would have to do if something happened to her, and her house is not very good. So it concerns me. And so how do you explain to young children, you know, that their main caretaker is no longer around? I don't think she would, at least my daughter, I don't think she would really understand or get it.
Yeah, she's young yet. Yeah.
But I have to say, I haven't attended a funeral since I was, like, 13. For
mm-hmm.
some reason, my friends just don't die, which is a good thing because I can't deal with funerals. My grandfather died when I was 17, and I didn't go to his, and I was fairly close to him. So, but I do little quirky things. My mom told me that I should go to the doctor and just get a random checkup and see how I'm doing. And I refuse to. Like, I won't go to the doctor. And she's like, well, you know, if you have something like cancer, which runs rampant in our family, don't you want to know? Well, no, I really don't want to know.
Wow.
I don't want to know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do the doctor thing regularly, and I have been, but I had a health scare a couple years ago that made me kind of wake up and realize that I really needed to do that, you know, once a year at, well, you know, for a woman, it's two doctor's visits a year, one to the OB and one to a standard doctor. That's not actually that much to ask, just to make sure that you're not going to, you know, drop dead in a couple weeks. I had a, I had a breast cancer scare, actually, and it was pretty bad. Everything turned out okay, but it was enough that, you know, we were all kind of looking at each other going, okay, this could actually happen. And, yeah, that made me very health conscious very quick and go, okay, yeah, no, you have to go to the doctor. You have to go, and you have to see the doctor, and then, you know, most of the time, it's actually not as big a deal as people say. You know, like, my husband's bad about not doing it, but I finally convinced him, and, I mean, he checked out fine, you know. He didn't walk out, you know, dying, so, you know, and most of the time, that, you know, most of the time, you do get a clear bill of health. It's the phone call that tells you there's a problem that's the really scary part.
What, baby? I don't know.
What? Hello?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was Constantine. She wanted to know why there was a hole in the yard.
Oh.
We've deducted that it's because of ants. So.
Nice name. I didn't know that was her name.
Nice name. She's got a really, really, really long name, and I was surprised. I was afraid she wasn't going to learn how to spell it. And everyone spells it with a C, and I have to be like, no, that's a K, and, you know. But I don't regret it. My son, of course, he's got a plain name, is Jeremy, since I guess I was unoriginal when I was 16.
Now, all of my kids, except for my youngest son, have normal all-American names. My youngest son got saddled with Iberus. I-B-E-R-U-S. Yeah. Now, this is because he's the seventh in my family, the seventh Iberus Joseph. It's a family name, which is basically the only reason why we did it, which is funny because there's a Southern saying, if an older person doesn't like a name and they're polite, they'll respond to you. Oh, so is that a family name? To which... like, yes, actually it is. But we call him IJ because of that. So I'm hoping that, you know, he's not going to take it too hard when he realizes, you know, no, your name is nobody ever, you know, yeah, there'll only be one. You know, you're going to be the only
one.
And I tried to look it up in, like, a it's not even in any of, like, the name books or anything. It's, you know, and, yeah, he's seventh in my family. I don't even know what it means. I tried to find out. I don't know. Like, apparently nobody's named their kid this in the past, like, I don't know, since my grandfather was named that. So, it's, yeah. But, and he told me the seventh. So I'm hoping one of my kids will do the same thing to their kid, because it's been in the family too long to, you know, let go at this point.
You know what it'll probably be is he'll probably give his name to his kid and be like, you know what, this is what my parents did to me, and I'm doing it to you. Constantine,
IJ,
he's one of them.
He's fairly safe, yeah, because he's been being called IJ the whole time, but, you know, eventually he's going to figure out what that I is for, and, you know, like, every time we take him to the doctor, they're like, Iberus, and I'm like, No, not Iberus. No, it's not Iberus. It's Iberus, actually. Yeah. But all the other ones have very normal names. You know, they you know, they're all American. He's the one that got the unusual name. And, like, when I was a kid, I used to, like, I mean, I was going to name my kids, like, the weirdest stuff. Like, when I thought about it when I was a kid, you know, like, I wanted to name, like, you know, I wanted to name my kids, like, Blue and Sky, and, like, I had all this stuff, and, yeah, no, I didn't do that at all. I didn't go that way at all. I went very normal for the last one. To actually, the only reason why he got it is because when I found out I was pregnant the fifth time, I said to my mom, I said, because she's been, there's no boys named Iberus. This has been her thing the whole time. My grandfather, and, you know, like, these big speeches, and her brother, and I'm like, well, I'm not naming my kid that. So when I got pregnant the fifth time, I said, you know what? If it's a boy, he'll get the name, just, you know, to shut you up. And then when I found out it was a boy, I was like, oh, no, I actually have to do this. I have no
Yeah, and Constantine not only got a long name, but she got a long middle name, and she's got a very long Dutch last name.
Oh.
Yeah, it means the way of the raven, which is really kind of cool. But
that is
at the
cool.
same time, it's super fucking long. It's super long name, and she's just looking at me like, you are dumb.
Oh, yeah.
My son, on the other hand, is super short. And, you know, I went through a weird period of time when I was, like, 19 and 20 years old, and I was like, okay, Constantine, that's what it is. So, I don't know. She,
Did I lost track of me or anything? It makes sense to me, like, you know, that I've been shortened to Connie, you know. She could certainly.
Yeah, well. Yeah, she's called Kay most of the time, like the laziest nickname you could possibly pick out of that entire thing is just Kay. So it's sad Kay. I'm Kay. I'm like, okay, I can deal with that. Kay. I call Jeremy Jerbear. I don't think he likes it too much. But he's going to be 9, so, you know.
Yeah, 9-year-olds are, my son will be 9 in September, and yeah, they're, 9-year-old boys are weird. I mean, they are. They're strange, it's a strange age, you know.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to the preteen years. I'm just not. He's been an awkward kid his entire life, and I'm not sure if that's my fault or or his dad's fault, but he's just been a really, really awkward kid. Like, he's short and really, really, really skinny, and my daughter is really tall, and she's bigger. Like, she's not, like, fat or anything, but she's built. And she's completely different, and it's so funny because for a long time they were the same weight and everything, and now she's almost up to my shoulder. She's only 5. All right.
Yeah.
By the time she hits 10, she's gonna be as tall as I am, feeling my clothes and shit. But
yeah,
my son is already showing signs of moving on to his awkward preteen stage, and I'm not looking forward to it. I don't want to deal with it with either one of my kids. I didn't plan on dealing with it. But I guess you really can't figure out, like, a game plan beforehand. So we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think, you know, I'm trying to think that if... my daughter... She had her own little brush with mortality today, which is really, it was weird. We went into a head shop.
What is this?
And I don't know what that is. Oh, it's a bug. Okay, stop playing with bugs. My daughter plays with bugs. Like, she picks up ants, and she said she wanted, it was ants. Okay, I get it. So... we went into this head shop, and we were looking at different things, and all of a sudden, one of the workers in the bag, like, fell down to the ground and started convulsing and, like, freaking out, and my daughter's just looking at him, what's wrong, mommy, what's going on, and I'm like, We're going outside. We're not going to be in here watching this. And the ambulance and the fire truck came on, and her eyes got all huge, and I'm like, okay, it's time to go. We're going to leave. My daughter, she sensed that there was something wrong, but I didn't necessarily want to, I didn't want to explain death to her. And she found out about my friend, and I just said, you know, mommy's friend's really hurt right now. You know, she needs to be in the hospital, which is similar to how I treated it with her when that happened with the employee at the shop we were at today. I said, you know, he's just hurt right now. They're going to take him to the doctors, and they're going to help him, and he's going to be okay, you know. Because I really think at that age, to say anything about death is kind of inappropriate unless it's necessary. You know, like,
well,
it's
very difficult to explain. Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to explain. I had a friend that died. Her son was about 3, and we went to the funeral, and his grandparents brought him to the funeral so he could say goodbye to his mom. Well, he comes walking up to the casket and starts trying to climb in the casket, screaming, "Mommy, wake up. Mommy, wake up," trying to lift her head up to try to get her to wake up. So, and then he's like, and then he starts crying because not only is she not waking up, but she won't hug him one last time. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was actually really hard. I was like, why would they bring him to the funeral? Like, I was telling you, that was so much. And I was like, why did they bring him? Why did they bring him? And then, like, there's this big scene, and it's just like, you know, oh, my God, you know, yeah, no. Kids don't need to be at funerals. They don't get it. And, yeah.
Well,
not only that, but I was thinking to myself, you know, this kid's probably going to have nightmares the rest of his life over this, you know.
Right.
That she wouldn't wake up.
I think there's definitely an age range that should be just thought of, like, X'd out. You should not take a certain age group to a funeral just because of that. They don't understand, especially if it's immediate family. Like, in that case, if it's like a mother or a sibling, you or a father, you definitely don't want, you want to separate that child from that situation. And then if they have questions, you can do it in a private setting and explain it to them better, instead of having their entire family and having to have them wonder why everyone's staring at this person that they love so much in a box, and why are they burying her, you know? Isn't she just asleep and stuff like that? Now, I think it might have been a different situation if it's like a grandparent or a cousin or something like that, something that's not as close to the core family as a parent or a sibling. Even then, I don't think that you should really exercise some caution before you do that. I would never, if my mom were to die tomorrow, God forbid, or who the fuck forbid, all right, if that was to happen, I would go, but I would definitely arrange for supervision of my children, because there's no way I would be able to bring my daughter there. And, you know, on top of it being already hard on the both of us losing her like that, it being even harder trying to explain what was going on, I don't think I could handle that. And I don't think that's a matter of strength so much as reality and being able to denote the difference between a proper situation and an improper situation for a child.
Yeah, well, yeah, I never even thought about it until I got to witness that whole scene. I was like, yeah, kids don't need to be at funerals because they don't, you know. Now my 6-year-old daughter has asked me a lot of questions about death. I mean, this has been, she was on a kick about this about 6 months ago. Like, you know, what happens when you die? Why do people die? Can they wake up again? Like, you know, all this stuff. And it's tough, you know, at least for me, because I'm trying not to push my stuff on them. I want them to make their own choices. So you know, the question, right. like, what happens when you die? My response is, what do you think happened? You know, and it was so funny because my daughter looked at me and said, I asked you what happens because you're an adult. I was like, oh, yeah, well, you got me back there, you know. You certainly
At that point, I told her, I said, I don't know.
Nobody does. You won't know until you die, you know.
Right. I think at that point, I would probably have said to my own daughter, you know, besides the fact that nobody really knows, it's, you really have to give it some thought. Because I personally, I take the route of, I believe that we return to the earth and we come back. Now, that's a very white light idea, and it's something that I've taken with me for many, many years. And I think even that might be a remnant of not being able to grasp the idea of dying and just being dead. So, I mean, when I grasp my mortality, there's a very good chance I might drop that too. But, you know, when it comes to it, she's got a lot of different ideas, and that's just how that is.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I believe it will be a great adventure.
Yeah. I was, you know, I'm also a big believer in, trying to ease the pain of you going as much as possible. That's, you know, like you said earlier, right. I think about that quite a bit, is what would I leave behind, you know? And, you know, what would I leave behind? What would people remember, you know? Because at the end of the day, to me at least, you know, that's the only, you know, possible immortality I could obtain, is that, you know, my family carries on the memory of me somehow. So, you know, that's very important to me, to make sure that, you know, if it did happen, that, you know, there would be stories and anecdotes and, you know, those kind of things. Because, I mean, there's some family members, you know, like in my family, you know, they're at least through stories and stuff going to live forever just due to their antics and what they did. And there's other ones that nobody really says anything about, you know. So, you know, my goal is at least, you know, that there'll be some kind of living memory or something spoken of. That way, you know, in some way I carry on. Because I, you know, I do think that's important, is, you know, what you leave behind. Because, you know, you see so many people who either leave nothing behind or they don't even consider it. And, you know, your children and stuff, it's like I told you before, you know, your children have your genetics and everything else. They make you immortal because they'll have children, you know, so your genetics will carry on, your memory will carry on.
Right.
You know, so that's always been a, you know, a real main focus of mine, is to make sure that my kids would remember.
All right. Well, it's about time to end the show. Someone in the chat said something that I want to repeat to end the show out. He or she, I don't know, says, live each day as it was your last. And that, I think that's extremely important to remember, is we are not for sure that we're guaranteed tomorrow. So with that, I'm going to end the show. And hopefully go inside and stop getting bit by mosquitoes. Thanks for everyone that showed up. And I'm going to run the outro. If I can find it. There it is.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Zadaraki Daroma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?